Welcome to the Wonder What podcast. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Rob. And what are we doing here, Robbie? What have you gotten me into?
Work. Just another...
Just more work.
Aspect of work. Yes, I'm sorry.
That's all right. This is a lot of fun. I like sitting down and talking with you.
Aw, that's nice. I like talking with you, too.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's better than not talking to you. It's better than us getting on here and just being silent and staring at each other angrily.
That's true. That's really true. And I would never do it on a Sunday afternoon.
and why is that?
Well, I've said before, the kids always joke about writing a book called Sleepy Pastor. And by 1 o'clock Sunday, you are so tired. And I always say that you're out of words. And so you've used up all your words and more. And what you start saying Sunday afternoon, a lot of times they're not real words.
No, they're words. They're words. They're just sometimes not contextualized properly. That's all.
None of us understand you.
You're just not deep enough.
But I think it could
transcend your ability to comprehend me.
It could be a really funny book.
Whatever. We're here to discuss all things Eastgate and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be a fun episode because we're going to be talking to Blake a little later on. Blake Roseman, who is the community pastor and middle school pastor here at Eastgate.
That's right. He does a lot of work, and we really appreciate what he does. So we wanted to give you all a chance to meet him if you haven't had the chance to hear a little bit about him and his story. So that'll be coming up a little later.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. He's a great guy, and you will enjoy him. And and that's an order. You will enjoy him.
You will enjoy
him. You don't have a choice.
He's not us, and that's a really one of the best things he's got going.
The best things about having a guest on is that it's not us.
That's right. And he is. I don't know that we ever talked about this in the interview, but we joke about how he is the extrovert of the group.
We do. I think we mentioned that.
So that's a good reason to keep him around.
We need extroverts.
We do.
The introverts are hiding. This is how we get out. We get out by talking to you via a podcast.
You're welcome.
So what are some upcoming Eastgate events, Robbie?
Well, it's the holiday season. We actually just ended Thanksgiving weekend. And
we had the night of pies too, and that was a lot of fun.
We had the night of pies, that was awesome. We did it on a Thursday night because we had that Lance Ford class on Wednesday, and so that was the first time we've done it on a different night, and so it was a little bit maybe different group. That
I think it was more of a challenge for people to come out, but we still had a great turnout, and we had a lot of fun with the pie in the face and the pie eating contest, and
so good,
some amazing pies. I usually am so busy, I don't get around to sampling any pies. Did you get any pies? I was able to get a couple little samples.
Yes.
Yeah. So did I. I got a little apple pie. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really good. So that was fun. And then we have coming up this month Christmas events.
Yeah.
A couple of Christmas events.
Instead of the night of pies, now we've got the night of milk and cookies coming up on Wednesday, December 6th at 6:30. We're having the night of milk and cookies.
Yeah, there's a little more information about that on our website, but eastgatefellowship.net. But basically, it just means...
And there's a Facebook page. It's a Facebook event. And that's probably the best way to get the information on it if you're on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. But the quick synopsis of it is Eastgate pretty much provides a bunch of cookies and milk. But it's just a fun night to hang out together. We have a gingerbread decorating contest. We have a photo booth. We have Christmas music playing. Misty's group does a one or two dances for everybody.
Yeah, if I had no voice.
Mm-hmm.
And... that's always fun, and it's just kind of one of those things. It's like the night of pies. It's just a time to hang out, get to know each other, and enjoy the. It's sort of to me sort of like kicking off the whole Christmas vibe there at Eastgate. It all started way back when we were doing Wednesday night meetings.
Yeah.
Wednesday night Old Testament studies, and one night I decided that we needed to take a break.
It was near Christmas, and you said, we need to have a fun night.
We need to have a fun night. So Liz went out and bought a bunch of cookies, and we had the very first night of milk and cookies, and it was a big surprise to everybody. I got up there. We did our normal worship service, and I got up and was getting ready to start teaching, and I said, actually, let's not do that. And they carried a table out full of cookies and milk, and we had a night of milk and cookies. And we've kind of been doing it ever since then.
Yeah, just not a surprise anymore.
No, it's not a surprise.
We don't even pretend to do a Bible study. We just hang out.
That's right.
And our kids have fleshed it out and made it much better than we ever did on our own. They, Janelle and Matt. And
we there's Christmas music that we do, but they also do a Christmas movie, I believe, for the kids. And yes, I think we even play a Christmas movie in the big room as well. And it's just a lot of fun. It's just, if you know, it's a fun time to come hang out. And
it's actually very fun for staff, too. We joke around how Sundays are so harried for us that we run around from place to place. We rarely really get to talk with people much, but that's one night. It doesn't really require a lot from us once it gets started, and so we can enjoy ourselves and talk to people a little bit more than
usual. It's actually a very nice night, and honestly, if you've been coming to Eastgate and been part of the community for a while and you're going to come to that event, I really would encourage you to be looking around, to pay attention. I noticed that at the Night of Pies, there was a couple people who I knew were new, and I went over and talked to them, but I did notice that people have a tendency to gravitate towards the people they know. So once again, just my little plug, if you notice somebody sitting around or standing off to themselves, seeming a little bit out of place or marginalized, this is our role as the body of Christ, get to know people.
That's right.
Community is everything. And so if we can encourage that, you know, we want to do it.
Absolutely. It's not an easy thing to do. I think
it's
most of us actually do not want to.
It is way out of my comfort zone to ever do that. But it doesn't matter. My comfort zone is not what I'm called to. I'm called to something bigger than that. So,
well, it leads me to the thought of this other group that we've been having, the four meetings of Next Door as It Is in Heaven. I'm not sure when this podcast will be released. It could be
probably when that's over.
It'll be over by the time this is out. But it doesn't matter, because basically all the information is in his book, which we have at the bookstore for $10. And it's called Next Door as It Is in Heaven by Lance Ford. And it has been so good to hear his perspective and to hear him encourage us to get to know our neighbors, physical neighbors, our actual physical neighbors, and just to be friends with them. And to
learn how to practice this whole ethos of being friendly, of being kind, of communicating and being present with other human beings.
Absolutely.
It's a funny thing how our culture right now does everything it can to keep us isolated and divided. So
absolutely.
You know, and again, like I said, I hate it, but you know, but it's all part of it. It's what we're called to.
There's moments where I feel like that initial interaction, it feels so risky and scary, and you feel very vulnerable. But once you start to get to know some of your neighbors, and we went for a walk tonight and talked to one of them that you'd already met, I hadn't met yet. But there's something very comforting then that, and wonderful.
It's a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful sense of not even just belonging, but just there's a sense of placement, of even security in the idea that you're not alone out here, isolated in your own house, but there's others around. Well, so we're talking about Christmas, so we got a other things going on in terms of scheduling that we need to let everybody know about and be aware of, that Christmas time comes with a different kind of a schedule for us.
It does, and Christmas falls on a Monday this year, and so Christmas Eve is Sunday.
It's Sunday, so we're not going to have our normal two services. We're actually just going to do one service at 10 o'clock, a time of Advent liturgies, songs that celebrate the Advent, and
that'll be fun. Do the kids stay out with everybody?
Yeah, everybody. It's all one service. We're all going to be grouped together. There's not going to be a children's
Sunday school,
but there is going to be a dance that the Kids Gate group has put together. So they're going to do
that. Practicing on that.
Yeah, not a dance, but a little program that they're doing.
Yeah.
And they've got several. There's going to be one then, and then at 6:30 every New Year's Eve. What?
Christmas Eve.
What did I say?
You said New Year's.
Oh. Yeah, we don't do anything for New Year's. But every Christmas Eve, at 6:30, we have the Christmas Eve service, and that's always a great time. The kids do different performances, and we sing songs. Yeah. We talk a little bit about the meaning and the significance of this. The British reading guy shows up.
He usually shows up. We'll see if we can get him to come again.
Yeah. And
it's
always
a very fun night.
It always snows on Christmas Eve at Eastgate.
Right.
Always. So that's
right.
Always something to look forward to. So just a reminder, Christmas Eve, one service on Sunday, 10 o'clock, and then come back at 6:30 and we'll have a great time.
And
with
again,
that.
All of these, if they're not yet, will be on our website calendar soon too.
And we'll put up flyers around the place too to help remind you.
Mm-hmm. And Eastgate and the email newsletters, all that. Some smoke signals too.
So what else is going on? What's going on in the news? Well, you know what? So here's something. Let me tell you what's going on in the news. So I read all kinds of different news aggregators. Is that what it's called? A news aggregator?
I don't know.
That sounds more like an alligator, but it's not what it is. But either way, and I like history. History is a thing that I'm always into. And so if something important comes up on archaeological discoveries or something of a historic nature, it pops up in my news feed. And so National Geographic just released some findings. Recently, they opened up the Tomb of the Sepulchre. It's called the Tomb of the Holy Sepulchre in Israel. Mm-hmm. It's considered the Roman Catholic site of the burial place of Jesus, his tomb. And of course, Protestants have always resisted that. They don't like it because it built a large shrine around it, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's a lot of trappings to Roman Catholicism that Protestants rankles them. Mm-hmm. So they've got a different site that they like. That there's no historic indicators at all that was at all the site. So my point is that the Tomb of the Holy Sepulchre, it is said to date back the time of its finding, its discovery, was about 300 AD. So like 300 years from the time that Jesus had risen from the dead. Constantine's mother apparently was the one who orchestrated and required that they go and find this thing. Hmm. The thing is, archaeologically speaking, nobody had been able to ever prove any date beyond 1000 AD, somewhere around the time of the Crusades. All of the architecture around it seemed to indicate that timeline. So everybody was kind of suspicious. We're not sure that it would go back that far. Well, they've just recently opened that tomb up last year, 2016, did a lot of studies and a lot of cleaning work and support around the structure of it. Mm-hmm. But they were also able to take some samples of some of the area, a little area of mortar that was down near the original limestone. And it turns out that it dates back to 335 AD, right at the time when the Romans were said to have gone and done their research to discover where the tomb of Jesus was. 300 AD, you got to realize, on archaeological levels, that is like as close to the source as we're probably going to get. So more than likely, we've actually just gotten an indicator that is at least the most likely site of Jesus' tomb.
Yeah, that's incredible. Cool? That's really... Where would you find more information about that?
National Geographic has it on their website. So,
wow.
But you could probably Google it and find it there and find links to it. But
yeah,
it's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah.
And again, we go back to antiquity. You know, you figure that the Christians were going to know where that tomb was. The people who that was meaningful to at that time. And it was, you know, it had not disappeared in Jerusalem. Christianity was still hanging on. And by the time that Constantine became a believer and began converting the Roman system over to something that honored or respected Christianity, we're not that far removed from the people who would have had an oral tradition or a knowledge of where that was. That's just exciting to me. I think it's really cool.
That is awesome.
And that just shows what kind of a nerd I am. Because, whatever.
It's fascinating.
Most people are probably like, whatever.
I don't think so. I think that a lot of people are interested in that. I think always as Christians, and you warn about this all the time too, is that we have to be careful not to place our faith in some sort of physical evidence or something like that. But I just kind of feel like, hey, that's kind of cool.
I
believe it anyway.
Right.
And so just to see something like that is encouraging and interesting.
I agree. I think so too.
So we always like to share a funny Eastgate story. If there's one that feels appropriate or one we can remember, I think there was one that happened at the holidays one time that was kind of funny. At least it was always one of my favorite stories.
What is it? Is it pertinent to the holidays?
Yeah, exactly. It was something that Janelle had happened to her when she was filling in as one of the Kids Gate teachers. I think, do you remember that one? Or
is this where the little kid came up to her?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So a family was visiting with Eastgate, and I, you know, I don't know the particulars of the family. I don't think that it matters necessarily, but the child came up to Janelle at one point and while she was teaching the class and said, I have to tell you a secret. And Janelle said, okay, what is it? And do you remember what the secret was?
Yes, the little girl, Janelle bent down, the little girl whispered in her ear and said, Jesus hates Santa.
And there you have it.
So. And then Janelle was like, oh, really? Okay, well... all right. And then why don't you go have a seat? And the little girl went and sat down. And a few minutes later, she grabbed a little kid next to her and said, hey, I have a secret.
Janelle's like, no secrets. No secrets.
No more secrets. Don't share those secrets.
So just in case, I would like a t-shirt that says Jesus hates Santa.
We quote that quite often. It's one of our favorites.
So anyway, that was a fun story from Eastgate Past. This the ghost of Eastgate Past.
That's right.
I don't know what the ghost of Eastgate Present is. Dead Santa. No, that's terrible. I can't say that.
Stop it.
I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. Yeah, we'll quit while we're ahead.
What have we been watching lately? I mean, there haven't been the holiday shows on yet really too much, but there's been a few things we've been watching.
I'm at a loss. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, Jessica and Matt were here. Over Thanksgiving, we started a new series on Netflix.
Punisher.
Yes. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, Punisher series. Yeah. And that's, you know, and of course, you got to be a comic book nerd to be interested
in it. We're
married to one. So if you fall into that category, then you might really enjoy this show. But we really liked it.
It was well done. Yeah.
If you liked Daredevil, if you liked The Defenders, Luke Cage, all those, it falls right in that whole same storyline in that same world. And
we got about three into it before we all started falling asleep, but it was really good. Or I should say, Matt fell asleep. I fell asleep. You and Jessica were as wake as could be.
We were bummed because we had to quit watching it because you people were all sleeping.
But we're morning people. Nah. And then the other thing, actually, it's a comic book thing too. Is it called Inside Comics or something with Robert Kirkman?
Oh, the secret history of comics or something like that.
We watched
Robert Kirkman's Secret History of Comics.
First one. Robert Kirkman's the author of The Walking Dead, and but he's got a show on there. And we watched one the other night. I don't know if it was the first one or not. But I thought it was fascinating about the history of those two guys who created Superman. Schuster.
Tell me who they were, Robbie.
And Spiegel. Spiegel and Schuster. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually Jerry Siegel and Joe Schuster. And I remember as a kid when I was really into a particular artist named Neil Adams who had revitalized the Batman series back in the 70s, and he started a campaign that was running in the comic. Was it running in the comic books? It couldn't be, because DC was, I don't know where I came across it. Maybe fanzines or something like that. But anyway, started a campaign trying to get justice for these guys because...
Yeah, it's a really sad story.
Yeah. They, as kids, basically, they sold the rights to this creation that they had of Superman. Nobody had wanted to look at it or touch it, but the owners of DC Comics were at a loss for what to do next, and so they just gave it a try, see if we can get this guy in tights out there that can do anything. And
he was the first superhero, and that surprised me. I had no idea.
Really? You didn't know that?
No, I didn't. I don't know. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. They talked about some of the other comics that were popular at the time. There were Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
And
a few science fiction-y kind of things, and a lot of adventure type strips and things like that.
But Superman came at a time when the country really needed a hero.
Yeah, late Depression era, and they needed somebody who was gonna be a hero to the everyman.
Yeah,
and of course it was during the time of the rise of Nazi Germany, and of course these two guys were Jewish, and so there was this sense of this larger injustice that was happening and the need for somebody. What's fascinating, if you really look at it, are the messianic overtones of the whole thing. Like Kal-El is who his father was. Kal-El is Superman's real name. Mm-hmm. Jor-El is his father. But El is the Hebrew word that speaks to divinity.
Yeah, and El Shaddai.
Yeah, so...
Wow.
It was. It's interesting. So there's almost this messianic sense that was ingrained in this, not that they were looking at it as though it was a messiah, but I don't know why that's fascinating to me, that ingrained hope and desire for something bigger than themselves, something transcendent that was going to take us beyond.
Yeah, and they were just an interesting couple of guys. One was the writer and one was the artist, and the artist was so visually impaired. He had big, thick glasses, but he had to lean real close into his work to see it, and...
I'm getting now.
Yeah, right. They sold their rights to Superman just kind of like as a one-time fee, basically, or one-time payment.
And they got hired on.
And then they both
on.
Work. Yeah, they were hired on as artists and writers until they all of a sudden saw how popular Superman was.
And all the licensing that came out of it, and they didn't see a dime of that. And so these guys were making millions and millions of dollars.
And when they sued, then they basically lost the lawsuit and then lost their jobs.
Right.
So they went to be delivery men. And it was really sad.
It was sad.
And I think a lot of artists have learned along the way from their mistakes.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's been a big example for a lot of people.
Yep. It's pretty cool. That was a good story.
It was. So, yeah, that's what we've been watching. And speaking of artists, I would love to just give a big shout out to our worship team members. I don't know how many people know this, but apart from the worship leader themselves, everyone else is volunteer and just shows up on their own
and
time.
Even the worship leaders, even the people that are,
it's a pittance.
They're like a hair's breadth away from volunteer status. Which is so true of so many people at Eastgate or
absolutely.
People that are staff. But we want to highlight the worship team because they're amazing, I think. And, when you consider, when you consider everything that they put into this, and especially around the holidays, you know, they all have to kind of pitch in and do a little bit more when it comes into the Christmas Eve service and all. It's just, I'm just so impressed with the attitude and the heart of everybody involved in that.
Absolutely. And music is one of those many things in life where everyone has an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of them put in their heart and soul there, and you know, not everybody's complimentary.
No.
and that's something they deal with, and they don't complain about.
Never.
I just want everyone to know, you know, how much work that they get to do what they love. I will say that. But still, it's a labor of love.
It is. I mean, even if you love it, it still requires the time and the commitment to be involved in it, to practice and to learn. And to learn new songs, and I'm always impressed. You know, I realize there are people who will let me know at times that, you know, you can go to this or that church, and it's like being at a concert every week, and it's amazing, and there's light shows, et cetera. And look, that's just never going to be Eastgate. That's not to speak derogatively about anybody else's perspective or philosophy of ministry, but our philosophy of ministry is that this is a community. And these are our liturgies. These are the times for the community to gather together and have one voice. And, you know, so we've always said we want to be competent and not a distraction. So
right.
It's not like we're looking to put on a great performance or anything. We just want to be competent enough to where we're not, you know, causing everybody to lose focus because they're just, you know, stressed out at how bad it sounds. But I am so impressed all the time. It always, to me, just sounds really good. And
me
these are
too.
People that don't have tons of time to be able to put into practices. And
right. And it does take the, like you say, the coordinated efforts. They come early for practice. And sometimes we have Saturdays. We've rearranged the stage. If anybody had noticed that change or not, I don't know if they know why we did that. But that was a really cool idea. It used to be where the worship leader would be in the front and all the worship team would be behind them. And that got changed. A few months ago, which I really liked.
Matt had read an article about how most worship scenes are set up, or state or platforms are set up to where it's basically like a rock performance setup. You've got the leader out front, and you've got all the supporting musicians to the side, and it's something that, you know, they just have the performance that way. But really, it should be set up in a way that the leader's at the back, to where everybody can see him, so that it's more like a jam session type thing. And
so they can look, so all the team is kind of curved around, so they can still see the worship leader and follow his lead.
His or her lead,
and in terms of which
I'm just trying to show
go.
You that I'm not misogynist in any way.
Thank you.
I
needed that.
Yeah, I'm very egalitarian when it comes to
so amazing.
I am. I'm pretty.
So anyway, if any of you have wondered why we've done that, that's why.
Yeah.
Because we don't view worship as a concert performance. We view it as a time for the team to encourage all of us to join in and worship with one voice.
Right. To be able
to
speak the same words together at the same time in the form of song. It's awesome. But anyway, the main thing we're saying is that it's a shout out. If you see the people that are up there giving their time, playing drums, playing guitar, violin, all the different things that are played up there, be sure to thank them and express express your appreciation for what it is that they do.
So that's not a thing?
Nope, it's not a thing. This is the time when we want to look at things that are not a thing, misquotes either in the Bible or I'm not otherwise. Actually doing a yeah. Normally we'll do things. We'll touch on misquotations of the Bible or things that people think are in the Bible. This is one that actually is not part of the Bible, but it's a misquotation of somebody who wrote a lot about the Bible, and that is C.S. Lewis.
One of our favorites.
Yeah, one of our favorites. So there's a quote, and I see it go around a lot. I see it. There's a meme that'll run around a lot of times. It's a quote attributed to C.S. Lewis as coming from Mere Christianity, saying humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. Have you seen that quote?
I love that quote.
It's a great quote, isn't it? Except that C.S. Lewis didn't say it. It's not in It's not in Mere Christianity. The quote actually, this is fascinating, actually comes from Rick Warren's book, The Purpose-Driven Life.
Really?
Yeah. And he says it, and he doesn't attribute it to C.S. Lewis. He was quoting C.S. Lewis near that, from what I understand. I haven't looked this up myself, but from what I understand, in the book, he was quoting something, and he
breaks quote.
He breaks quote, but he makes this statement, and it gets attributed then later on to C.S. Lewis.
That's fascinating.
So, anyway, so it's not a bad quote.
Yeah,
I think it's a valid statement. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's not about being self-deprecating. It's just not being self-obsessed. So
that's something.
So it's a good quote, but it's not C.S. Lewis. And when you see that, you can feel smarter than everybody else.
Which is the goal.
which is the goal for humility.
That's right. That's right. Well, here's another quote that I saw today that I really liked. This is from Rachel Cruz, and I think it's apropos for the holidays. I think that's basically why she put it up there. But it said, or she said, comparison steals your joy and your paycheck. And I think that's something that this time of year we really have to be careful
about. Oh my gosh,
about.
That's a really good quote.
Yes.
Say and it again.
Comparison steals your joy and your paycheck.
That's so important for us within a consumer culture to keep in mind.
And this is a time of year where we're just bombarded with the consumerism and feeling pressured as parents, even as grandparents. I don't get that from my kids, but just in general, you know, just want to just flood them with gifts. And I think we've all been on the other side of that gift opening day, and we're like, oh my gosh, this was so much. I mean, the kids, they want to open one and play with that one gift right then. And we make them set that aside. No, no, there's five more or more. And but either way, that's fine too. I think there's lessons to be learned in all of that. And we want to be generous, of course, and that kind of thing. But it's just, I think, something good to keep in mind. And so along those lines too, we did just finish our last meeting with the financial group. I might have mentioned this before, but we did just have we had a regroup a month later of just what's working, what's not. And we talked a little bit about the holidays then and teaching our kids to learn to be generous during the holidays as well. And how, and this I guess would be my money minute, and to encourage all parents to begin to teach your kids where money comes from. And that it doesn't just come from your pocket. And I was talking to my little granddaughter the other day, and they're doing a cousin exchange. And they have a $5 limit that they are going to buy a gift for their cousins. And I was asking her about it, and she said, oh, she only had $1. And I said, well, do you want to come over to my house? And I can give you, you can do some work for me, and I'll pay you some money for it. Then I'd pay you $1, and you can start making some money for that. And she went, no, that's okay. I'm just going to make them something. And I thought, you know, it's
what
such
she
a
means
hard...
by that is she'll go and see Papa. He'll give
go
her
see
a dollar
Papa,
for nothing.
Or she'll go to ransack Mom's closets and craft supplies and do something that doesn't require any money at all. But it is
which is
good.
All right, which is a good thing.
That
but
is.
At the same time, the point is to
the supplies
to
even have to come from somewhere.
Yeah, right.
That
right.
money comes from work,
that's
and
right.
to teach your kids at a young age that it doesn't come. You know, from a credit card or from mom or dad or papa or grammy or whatever.
To take money out of the abstract and make it something real.
Real.
Because we have a problem with that in our culture.
Yeah, we get attached to it pretty easily.
Well, even beyond that, the abstraction of money.
Oh, right.
I know that when you put us on a cash, I notice how I word that.
Yeah, yeah.
When you put
that's
us
okay.
on a, this
I'll
woman
that.
You gave me, put us on a cash system. But I mean, for me, money is real again. It wasn't
absolutely.
For so long. It was an abstract concept. I would look at you, ask you, can I buy this? And you would kind of shrug and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And now we absolutely know. It's a very tangible kind of thing. And what a wonderful thing to be able to teach our children and get them started on that, to break away from these cultural norms that are fairly unhealthy when you look at the larger picture.
Absolutely.
Where we are. So, all right, cool. Good stuff, Robbie. Thanks.
All right, cool.
Okay, so we sat down with Blake Roseman. We like to highlight some of the staff on the podcast here, help you to get to know them a little bit more. So without further ado, we sat down in our living room with him to have a chat, and it was a good time. So take a listen to this. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
All right, so we're sitting down with Blake Roseman, who is the community pastor here at Eastgate. I feel like we made that title up, but I don't know. And
we heard it from someone else.
It works.
He's also the middle school pastor here. He's been...
So far.
So we're keeping an eye on him. We don't know. So how are you doing today, Blake?
I'm doing very well.
Awesome.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, okay. Too. Thanks for doing this for us. This is... You know, it's one of those things where we want to take the time to kind of introduce different staff members to the community, and for whoever listens to this podcast, the three people that I think that are possibly
right.
listening to
it's going viral any second
now that you're here.
So. Oh, the worst podcast is the one that's it's just going to be a meme.
It'll mostly be people like, "Can you believe this thing? This is the worst thing I've ever heard in my life." Well, so Blake, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been coming to Eastgate?
I don't know, like 16 years or it's 2001. So I think that's like around 16 years that I've been attending here that you guys have.
Okay, so that's right after we had moved into the.
I've been trying to invade you guys for a while now.
We moved into the Beachwalk Center in 2000. We left Promenade
right.
Mall.
But it was just a coffee house whenever I first got
yeah,
here.
Yeah, we only had the other side.
Yeah. There was no Lee's Fitness thing that we had moved into, and it was just...
Didn't have the big room.
Right, and so it was just a one-foot stage with, I believe, maybe bamboo behind the stage.
Yeah, we did. We had bamboo. That's exactly right.
Later we changed it to corrugated metal, I feel like, because we... Right. Yeah. It on there for some crazy
but that
reason.
Was later on. But yeah,
you
we
glued
definitely
on
had bamboo.
Metal to the wall.
I have no idea why. Like,
yeah, that was kind of ugly. I mean, ugly to take off.
It was not a good thing.
Yeah,
super professional.
So, how did you end up coming to Eastgate? What was that all about?
By accident.
Okay,
but not accident.
Well, it's a church by accident anyway, but not by accident.
Right on. So, I ended up in Florida. In 2001, April of 2001, I met my wife Gwen online. This is before like eHarmony and things like that. But we were in an AOL chat room. She was talking against somebody. They were talking against her. I basically took her side on something, and we started chatting. And then I got to talking on the phone with her for a little while, and then I ended up over here in Florida.
From where?
From Baton Rouge.
Whoa.
I can't believe you didn't volunteer that information that Rob had to ask you for.
No, it's kind of... LSU would have come up at some point.
It would have. Made the it's connection. Just a matter of time.
So, anyway, but I ended up coming over here and to Florida. And then shortly after...
That to meet Gwen?
I did come to meet her, yes. And she, her and I, you know, we've been together ever since. But so anyway, I came over here and I started working at Fun City. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
the castle on
yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, yeah.
On Middle Beach Road there.
That's not there anymore.
No, it's been torn down. So anyway, I...
Sad city. Sorry.
What? You didn't like Fun City?
Yeah, it was... that's a thing. So... Coming from Baton Rouge, we don't have a tourist season over there. I started working at Fun City then October or something like that. The manager came to me and said, "Hey, look, we're going to be closing down." And I was shocked. I said, "I thought we were doing well." You know, they're like, "Yeah, we just shut down during the winter." I said, "That's the thing, huh?" And so I was shocked. And anyway, I ended up becoming friends with a guy named Kirk Cielkus. And he is Rob Cielkus's
right
son.
Yeah.
Rob Cielkus owns Beach Music right beside us. And
yeah.
Rob Cielkus used to play for the band here at Eastgate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
100 years ago. And
feels like a long time ago.
Yeah. So that's... I ended up coming over here because of that. I was friends with Kirk, and we really just played guitar and smoked weed most of the time. And so
All right.
He asked me to... He's like, "Man, my dad's got a setup. You know, he's got a whole thing in his house." And you know, I don't know what you call it, a studio.
And, yeah, yeah.
And he said, why don't you come over? You know, my dad plays in this little, you know, church band or whatever, and we'll go and meet up with him, and then we'll go over to his house. I said, sounds good. So we came over here to the coffee house, and I started listening to Rob Sielkus play music, and he got done. And then Kurt came and said, hey, man, you want to go over to my dad's house? I said, yeah, man, sure. That sounds good.
So you came and just hung out for the worship time and then bailed?
It wasn't even the word. Like, we listened to the last 2 minutes of the last song.
Oh, okay.
Sielkus was getting his stuff packed up.
Gotcha.
You started talking.
And you guys bailed.
Gotta go.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God.
I have that effect on people.
Yeah, so anyway, we did that. We went over to Rob Sielkus' house, and Rob Sielkus was very kind to me. And despite my pothead appearance and acting and the whole nine that went along with that. And then 2 weeks later, Kirk asked me if we wanted to do the same thing. And I said, sure, that sounds good. And then we came back over, and Rob Sielkus was packing up his stuff. You started talking, and Kirk said, hey, man, you ready to go? And I said, I think I'm going to stay and listen.
Wow.
And that's
that is so cool.
Yeah. So that's how I ended up here at Eastgate. So, and you haven't been able to get rid of me since.
Nope, but that's good. That's a good thing. That's been a positive thing for us. So, and then now, you are married.
I am married. Yes.
And
to my wife.
Yeah.
I'm married to my wife.
There you go. Well, that's good.
Tell us about that.
My wife.
Obviously, this is Gwen. We've already talked about Gwen.
Right. So, Gwen is the most awesome person I know. We've been married. I met her in April. We were together for a little while, for a year or so, and then we got married in 2003. So, whenever I first met her, the company I was with in Baton Rouge shut down. They gave me a small severance of $600 or $1,000 or something. It wasn't a lot, but it was some. And then I came over here, and Gwen just wanted me to stay here. She actually liked me.
Wow, that's surprising.
So yeah, and
I mean, because that's one of those things we're always confused about, that because Gwen's this beautiful lady, and
I'll actually
we keep trying to figure out
even
what,
more about what? How awesome she is. This is amazing. So whenever I first met her, she worked at JCPenney in town. In fact, she worked with Shirley Allen.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they've known each other since before.
No kids.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
I didn't know that.
And Shirley was really kind to Gwen at the time, too. Like, Gwen would come in hungover, and Shirley would, like, make accommodations for her and stuff.
Aww.
Like that. And, you know, just knowing that she was. Anyway, Shirley's so sweet. So whenever I first met Gwen, I'd also come off a really bad relationship, and I mean, there was things like whenever I first met Gwen, I told her, if you ever get me to love you, then I'll marry you. Like, I was horrible. I was a horrible human being. And she got me to love her. I she was impossible not to fall in love with. And we were together for, you know, a while before I even came to Eastgate. So
you and Gwen have two amazing boys. Tell
yes.
us about them.
I'm glad you said amazing, because they are.
They are.
They are.
We make the best kids. Me and Gwen are good at that.
Too much information.
So Christian is my oldest son. He's 14, and he is one of those people that's just good at everything that he does. You can give him anything, and he just immediately picks it up, and it's, you know, he's one of those people that just kind of make you a little sick. You know, you're like, why are you so good at everything? But he's really great at sports. He's handsome. He's funny. Got a great personality. He's smart.
Nice kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
great.
So dear.
Yeah. He's got a major, awesome heart. You know, he just takes after me so much. It's just
really because I'm
reveling in that.
Yeah, you were thinking Gwen's college was coming out. Right? Anyway, he's pretty amazing. He's in high school now, and you know, I mean, you guys have watched him grow. He's
yep.
He's a man. He's a legitimate young man now. I don't know how that happened, but it's there. It's here. He shaves.
Happens, you know? We watched him play at an Arnold High School football game this year, and that was really fun.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So he's playing soccer now. We never stop. Oh. All he does is go to school, practice, and eat. And yep. he's good at all of them.
Eating part two, right?
Yeah. He's really good at eating. That. He does a lot of that. We're always astounded that Gwen has to make extra meals and stuff. So, now, my youngest son is 13 now. My youngest son's a teenager.
Think of
and
that.
He's got an incredible personality, kind heart, and just an amazing kid altogether. And he also happens to have autism, and he fights very hard through all that. And his personality shines even through that, and it's just so funny. So Jordan does a lot of really fun things that we've learned to. So we had to embrace it, otherwise we'd go insane.
Sure,
He's got major OCD, and he's so we've got his meds, you know, pretty neutralized now, and a lot of this stuff has got a lot better. But he just has his habits that those are the things he does, and also I think that might be how Christian has the heart that he does. He's raised. We trust Christian more to watch Jordan than any other person on the face of the planet. So.
Well, I think it also informs us a lot about you and Gwen and why your hearts are the way they are. Mm-hmm. You've been put in some challenging situations, but clearly God's grace comes through through you and to you and through you as well. And it's evident in the way you interact with people here.
And I think that's a testament to how awesome Jordan is, you know.
Right on.
So he, you know, one of the funny things he does, just a couple little funny things, just got to help you understand autism a little bit. He doesn't speak, you know, he still wears pull-ups, you know, he's not potty trained, 13 years old, but he just does some really cool things. Like he jokes with his brother, goes and stands in front of the TV whenever he's playing video games very slowly. And then Christian starts yelling and he'll run away laughing and come right back and do it.
That's just like Janelle used to do that as well.
Too, so. Yeah. Being the youngest, she'd do what she could to irk the other kids, interrupt what they were doing. So that's awesome.
So, and Jordan does it well. It's lovely. But he just has, like, you know, certain OCD things. You know, if he were to meet you and you let him play with your keys whenever he first met you, that's what you would have to do every time that he saw you.
Is that right?
He'd grab your keys out of your pocket, mess with them for a minute, and give them back. But
so he's got a great memory.
Oh, my gosh. It's ridiculous.
I remember one time, and this is years ago. He was younger. He was a lot younger. And I don't know exactly what was going on, but I could tell you wanted to be able to go into the worship service, but you had Jordan here. Mm-hmm. And so I just said, would he come, you know, hang out with me? And you said, we can try it. And he and I paced, like, for, I would guess, however long the worship service was.
And if I had to guess, it was the same
We path. Followed the same pattern, and he would go back and touch the doorknob to the classroom, turn around, and then we'd walk back. But we did that for, you know,
20 or 30 times.
Yeah, but it was cool.
Was perfectly content doing it.
He was, and I felt so honored that he would hang out with me and do that.
To earn that place.
Yeah, that's really cool. But I like being able to have that insight, or even just you being able to share that with us, the idea of the pattern and the the repetitive patterns.
So if you're not that way, you go crazy. You see what I'm saying? So this is where Gwen and I had to lean on each other tremendously. I mean, we've been to the brink of insanity. In fact, Georgina was on your podcast not long ago, and she was talking about, you know, some of the challenges of having somebody with these type of issues, you know. And you will lose your mind if you don't embrace it and learn to love the things that go through it. My biggest growth in Christianity has come as a direct result of of nearly losing every, you know, losing my brain, dealing with him, you know, with the patterns over and over again. And you're just like, why don't you stop, you know, tearing the wall? I mean, so at one point he was peeling the paint off the wall and then the paper off of the drywall. And then, you know, so where there's holes in his bedroom, you see, so the patterns that are fun can also be extremely destructive. So, I mean, we've had to deal with all that.
Remember hearing on your podcast one time he went around and did he turn all the lights on or unscrew the light bulbs or something?
Oh, yeah. No, we had to unscrew the light bulbs.
That's what it was.
So, yeah, he would go through and he would turn on and off the light switches. And, you know, it's okay at 6 p.m., but at 3 a.m., autistic kids don't sleep either until you can get their, you know, medication and stuff right. But at 3 a.m., all the lights needed to come on in the house, you know. It's just not the best time. So we would literally have to unscrew the light bulbs and hide the light bulbs. Or he would get a chair and screw them all back in. So, I mean, it's just, you know, one of those things. So And the thing is, too, like, you know, Gwen and I have made it, and whenever we first found out that we had, that Jordan had autism, we found out that 1 out of 5 parents stay together and don't get divorced. Out of
1 out of 5.
1 out of 5 parents stay together if they have an autistic kid.
Wow.
My goodness.
And so whenever we heard that, we said to each other, we're going to be the one. We're going to be the 1 out of 5. We're going to make it, and we're going to do this
That's
thing.
That's awesome. That's admirable, man.
And so, we're still going along. Mm. And Gwen says at this point, you know, she just doesn't want to get a divorce because she doesn't want to train anybody else. She uses the word train. Yeah.
And there's wisdom
not
in that.
Not teach, but actually train.
There's
like
great
a dog,
wisdom
so.
In that.
And the fact that she can say that and know that you'll take it yeah. is a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have fun. I absolutely adore my wife. She's seen every worst part of me. And
well, you guys have a podcast too called Clearly Random, and I'll just throw out there that it's unfiltered and it's very honest. It may not be your cup of tea. No. A lot of people really enjoy it. A lot of people listen to it and enjoy it. If it's not your cup of tea, you don't have to like his podcast, but you have to love him.
That's right.
I love he and Gwen both.
Yeah, we are unfiltered. It is. It's interesting. So,
yeah, I've always loved your podcast. Jessica told me about it a while back, and I had to go back and start from the beginning and listen to every single episode. And honestly,
why did you have to listen to every episode, Robbie?
Because, you know, I have an obsessive sense of completism. I can't just start a book in the middle. But honestly, it really was your podcast that inspired me to want to do something about Eastgate. Mm-hmm. I love the honesty, the reality of it, and just your conversational approach to it is just really good.
It's actually been our counselor. In a sense, we feel healthier as a result of it, and we feel like that, you know, we are able to be a little more open and honest because it's being recorded.
That's right. You're doing this out in front of everybody.
So, and we're safer, and you know, in that sense, so we have fun with it. But yeah, Gwen's a pretty astounding person. And,
she really is.
She is.
We can attest to that.
And the thing is, you know, I've been on missions trips with you guys halfway around the world. I've been to Haiti, and you know, a lot of people, and I do a lot of here at Eastgate, and a lot of people will say things like, you know, oh, you know, you do so much, and also, I'm not the one actually doing a whole lot. Gwen's actually the one at home making the sacrifice and keeping everything together, and praying for me and giving me advice, and you know, thank her.
Absolutely.
Whenever you see her, thank her. She's the one that receives all the tiredness, I guess.
So now, as like community pastor, we say as community, I mean, you kind of look after the needs of the community,
kinda.
Right?
All I really do is walk around and talk to people,
and which is perfect,
glorious.
Which is exactly what we need because we're introverts.
We're hiding in the media room.
We're the introverts,
sometimes
and we need
you'll find
a resident
3
extrovert
Woodrums or more in the media room at any given time.
Oh, hiding. Yeah.
So that's really all I do. I walk around and I talk to people.
No,
and,
you do
and
more
people,
than that.
You know, they talk to me back,
and so,
you visit.
But you'll visit people in the hospital. You'll check up on people if there are needs around here.
You go
I know
visit
that you're
some of the
on
small
top
groups.
Of that. You visit with this. In fact, that's the other thing that you do is you kind of oversee the small group activity here, or
right.
as best as
kind
we
of facilitate
could.
It.
Yeah,
in a sense that I just know what's happening.
Yeah.
And know when they meet, kind of thing.
And then, you used to share the middle school
right.
responsibilities with Brian.
Right.
Brian had to step down recently just because of workload schedules
work
and things like that.
And I learned a lot from him. It was really awesome. So I've been doing that for about a year. Brian and I have been in there with the middle schoolers for about a year, and we had tons of fun with it, learned how to build trust with the kids. That was the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, whenever we first started, the entire mission was just to help the kids know that they could trust us.
Right on.
And to get to know the kids. There was no other agenda other than that. That's gone really well. I'm so thankful to God the way that whole dynamic has come together.
You're great with them. I got to see you firsthand a few weeks ago with them. And you're just wonderful with them. And they seem to like you very much, enjoy being with you. And you're just like one of them in the middle of the group there.
Right, because my mentality is
I was just going to say that. I was just going to offer that as a possibility.
But I love my middle schoolers. They're my kids, man. You know, and I
Well, you do an outstanding job, and we really appreciate what you do around here.
So I kind of want to revisit this, though, because, like, so we're talking about how you came to Eastgate and you were a pothead. Has that changed or anything? Or do we, is there anything we need to address?
Do you want this on record?
So things have altered slightly.
Slightly.
No, I suppose, so.
Poor Rob.
A lot of people, you know, I have friends that, you know, I talk to and they're like, I came to the Lord on, 9:58 p.m. on September 23rd or whatever.
Right.
I don't have that. I don't have a time or a day. I don't remember an incident either. I know that I started to read my Bible a lot. In fact, the way that I quit using drugs was by reading the Bible, because I didn't just use pot. I mean, I was using all drugs at the time whenever I met you guys. But what was happening is I was wanting to read the Bible, but I would get stuck on verses. And I couldn't, I was like, man, I can't, because I couldn't concentrate. I was high. And so anyway, I started noticing, like, in the morning times, I was retaining the Bible better because I was sober in the morning.
Okay,
times.
Gotcha.
And so, like, it just kind of moved later and later in the day. I was like, I started, the fog started clearing up, I guess. And I was like, hey, wait a second. I can understand here. This a lot better whenever I'm not high. I haven't always been the smartest of people. So anyway, it took me a little while. God was very patient with me. But I stopped using because I just wanted to read the Bible more and more. Mm-hmm. And I was getting into it more and more. And so I was set aside, like, big chunks of time where I wouldn't get high so that I could read. And then I just kind of started losing the desire for it. And one of my favorite Bible verses, it says, the Lord will give you the desires of your heart.
Yeah.
And I think that's a twofold thing. I think that he placed desires in my heart to read the Bible and then gave me the desire of understanding it better.
Right on.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, I stopped wanting to party. I stopped going to La Vila and Spinnaker and, Sandpiper and all those places. Sandpiper Beacon Beach Resort.
That's a thing? I mean, I know it's a resort, but that's what...
They have a bar there.
Yeah, they have a bar there, and it's on the west end of the beach where there was not really very many cops at the time.
The fun things I learned about.
So, yeah, Gwen actually worked at the bar there and was friends with the bartender. She worked there before I got there, and she worked every spring break. She was a cheerleader at Gulf Coast whenever I met her.
Okay.
And we were just partying. Like, I've never seen anybody be able to drink like Gwen. It was I don't know whether
everybody
to be concerned or impressed, but she could do it. So anyway, we would go there and I'd just get free drinks all night long. And I mean, I would do that. That's what we used to do. Sandpiper. Wow. It's just what we did. But anyway,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail the conversation.
I just stopped doing that more and more. I mean, like, and then it was really interesting. Gwen and I were living together. And then at the time, one of us started coming to know God. And then at some point, I went to her and I said, Gwen, I love you more than I ever have, but I want to move out. And she didn't get that. She didn't know God at the time. And she was like, what is happening? And so she talked to Kirk and she was like, I found this out later. She was like, is Blake seeing somebody else? What's happening? And he's like, I don't know what's happening with him, man. And so, I mean, nobody ever, this is the thing I've told people before, and this is why I'm really big and then, like, not pointing out people's sin and, getting them straight with the Lord. Where nobody ever told me drugs were bad. Nobody ever told me sex outside of marriage was something to frown upon or whatever. I never heard any of that. I never heard I don't need to be living, cohabitated or whatever. These are just things that the Holy Spirit put on my heart.
Right.
And so I was praying a lot about it because Gwen was wanting to leave me, but I loved her. Like, I actually had a capacity for love at that point. Mm. Before, it was more of an exchange type of thing, right? But now, I mean, I, like, literally had a capacity to love her. And so anyway, I was praying a lot about that. And I was like, God, I really need you to tell me what to do because I love her. I want to marry her. But I just don't feel like I'm supposed to be living with her and all this other stuff. And then, I mean, we had stopped having sex, but she came to me and she's like, I'm pregnant. And I said, God, you could have been a touch more subtle than that. But I immediately, Gwen grew up in a broken home. My parents were divorced. We immediately made a decision that we were going to be together and we were not going to, this was it. And it's been wonderful ever since. So anyway, that's it.
That's awesome.
That's
really
cool.
And I think I've mentioned this before, but I mean, you're in good company if you're saying that you don't have a specific date
that you look back on and say, I mean, C.S. Lewis, that was his whole thing. That's why so many evangelicals were freaked out by him, because he didn't point to a specific period in time when he prayed his sinner's prayer.
Right.
But it just became one of those things where he gradually embraced by faith the reality of Jesus. And
I think there's even the cooler thing than that is that Jesus woos us.
Right on.
I mean, he literally, I fell in love with him over time. He relentlessly pursued me for all those years and has continued to do so throughout my Christianity.
Right. Isn't that the way it is in real life too? I mean, it's not like we see a person, it's like, as of this date, you're the one.
Yeah. Yeah.
True.
And it takes time. It takes time to develop that relationship and understanding and love. I mean, that's real life. So why wouldn't it be
any
that
different
way
with the one who created life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with a date. I mean, you can have a date where saying that's it, no more, I'm not living this way. But it still takes time to develop.
Exactly.
From there.
I think what it is, what it reminds us is that we don't want to, you know, like you said once before, we want to make bigger boxes for God. We're not going to deceive ourselves and think we're going to get rid of the boxes. We're just that dumb. But we'll make bigger boxes to allow for God to deal with individuals whatever way he wants to deal with them, as opposed to us defining how it's got to be.
Isn't that big of us?
I love it. We're so big.
You're welcome.
God is so lucky to have us. I just want to watch out for lightning bolts. Sorry.
Skies are clouding up out there.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
I need to look up there.
What would you say you do for a living?
Because obviously Eastgate is very, very part-time. It's
it's
lucrative. I don't have to do anything else.
You are a hair's breadth away from being a volunteer. So what kind of work do you do?
I get a clipboard and I'll walk around really fast.
You've heard about that.
Yeah, I have. That is so funny. I actually specialize in window film. Like your brother does cars, but I do flat glass, meaning I do businesses and homes.
Okay.
Put solar window film or security window film on businesses and homes. I actually work for Emerald Coast Glass Products now. I used to work for them. I managed the entire company. Then I stopped after I got back from Africa.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I came back from Africa and I was sitting on the corner of Cherry Street and 15th Street one day, and I said, God, I'm in an air-conditioned car on a paved road with a cell phone in my hand. There's a McDonald's and a Burger King and a Winn-Dixie and a bank and a nail spa and a gas station and an auto parts store. And this was a month after we got back. And and I said, this entire block right here could sustain Tonge for a year.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't even have to live by faith here in America. Like, how in the world do I live by faith? And he told me to start my own business. So I started my own business doing construction, but I'd never done construction in my life, but I did just start doing that. So I started learning how to do drywall and painting and, you know, a lot of stuff. I just got a lesson from YouTube. And
there you go. And you can learn to do anything on YouTube.
Right.
I think you're underselling yourself. I know you know how to do a lot of that. So, but maybe, like, I didn't know you just learned, but you obviously have an aptitude for that.
I do have, so I have an ability to work with my hands. I do have that. I've always, my dad was in construction. I never really worked with him, but I did work with him on like building furniture and that kind of thing. And just I have a kind of an artsy mentality whenever it comes to that. So anyway, I started doing that for several years. And it was really, really good learning process. I'm a little bit too nice to be able to run my own business though, because I want to give everybody a great discount and all this other stuff at the, you know, begrudging me of my wife. She's like, Blake, this is worth far more than that.
Yes.
Like, no, I'm going to give it to him for $28. So anyway, I did do that for a long time, and now I've through a lot of prayer and needing money and things like that, I found out that I can make just as much money with it. Basically, my knees told me I got to stop doing tile.
Gotcha.
Is what really happened. I'm 37 years old, and I've listened to people that are older than me that tell me that their knees are bad, like you. And
never heard of such a thing. What do you mean?
So anyway, I'm just
take care of those knees.
Yeah. So I sit there and say, I don't want to be 60 years old and barely able to walk. So I'm gonna stop doing this. Window film, you know, doesn't require physical labor. I like doing it. I have a special skill that not everybody has around here. And I'm just utilizing my talents.
So are you doing some of both then? Some film and some...
Yeah, so I do. So okay. Like last week, I have a lady that, you know, she has several properties around here. She lives up in Atlanta and she hired me. I, you know, touched up, painted and patched some walls and hung some curtains and built some beds, you know, that kind of thing. And I just kind of do that whenever it's slow in window film or whenever I feel like that it's a good enough job to go and do.
Oh, good.
But I turn down Tahoe work all the time. I mean, it's just I want to do it and it pays fairly well. But my knees just start yelling at me and like, you don't need the money that bad. And
that's
I say, okay, knees, I'm going to listen to you.
That's right. Listen to those knees.
The cool thing is I stopped doing that about a year ago or so, maybe a little bit longer. And my knees don't hurt anymore like they were. So, cause there was a while I was limping around and stuff.
Right. You know, I remember seeing that.
So I definitely don't do that
maybe
anymore.
Maybe I should quit doing tile work. Maybe that'll help my knees.
That's what's going to do it. I've or never getting new
done
DNA.
Tile work. I don't know anything about, I know nothing about, I can't do anything useful. There's nothing, I meet all these people, we're talking to Lance Ford the other day, and he can build his own house. I can't do anything useful.
Right. But you can eat.
I can eat. I can eat. And I can consume.
You can you're open good to jars.
Have. I have. No, I can't always do that either.
You got one of those rubber things? Put it on the counter enough times.
That's right. Yeah.
Look, I opened it from the bottom.
There, got it. Where's the Tupperware? So now Gwen also is an entrepreneur, isn't
yes.
she?
Gwen is a multifaceted entrepreneur. So with Jordan having autism, we're very limited on our time. One of the other great things about me owning my own business, I've been able to go to all of Jordan's doctor's meetings, IEP That's meetings. Awesome. I get to go to Christian's football games, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I get a lot more freed up of time. So that's why Gwen does the businesses that she does. She runs Organic Chick, where she makes organic granola and different foods. She has Smell of a Rose Boutique, which sells clothes and purses and jewelry and those type of things. We do pop-up shops several times
that.
A year.
What's that? What
a
does
pop-up
that mean?
Shop, we rent out a conference room at a hotel, and like I've built displays for her, and she puts all of her clothes on display and like make a dressing room and all this other stuff. And we just go and fill up this room for a day or two, and we advertise it on Facebook and everywhere else, and then people just come in. And so we have this collection of clothing. They buy as much as they want to, and we make the money back that day.
Huh.
So she's able to make a decent amount of money on those pop-up shops.
Okay.
So she just had one. We're doing another
one. Is
that
a thing? Is that a trend or something? Or I've never heard of
that. That is Gwen's trend.
Oh, is it really?
She says that it happens. Like, people do, like, trucks and things like that, where they have, like, a U-Haul truck or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, one of those box trucks, and they'll have something in there. In some of these bigger cities and things like that. But yeah, so she's done that here. And last time invited many people from Eastgate, a lot of all other women business owners from Eastgate. And they all came and sold their stuff as well.
Wow.
I think it's a great really idea. Well. I didn't get a chance to go to that one, but I know Janelle and Allison went and they loved it. Said it was really fun.
Yeah. And it was fun. I got to see Sammy there too. She was always makes me laugh.
Aww.
And then she got some cookies or whatever. So.
Yeah.
Now, and then isn't she a fitness instructor too?
Right. Oh. So also she works at Sequence Fitness on the beach. So she's certified in Zumba and in body pump. So like this morning, like I said, with time, she got up at 4 a.m., got ready to go. So she taught a class at 5 a.m.
Wow.
At Sequence, a body pump class. And
that's awesome.
That's the time that she has to work. And so
5 o'clock comes once a day for me. If I had to be in a class and teach it at 5 o'clock in the morning, the class would be, okay, lay down.
Okay, let me ask you this, though.
Get back with me.
Someone invited you to go fishing.
That's different. That's
You'd
different.
See 5 o'clock that day.
No, okay, whatever.
That's once a year.
That's right. That's right. If every week, somebody, it wouldn't happen.
No,
it just wouldn't happen. I'd start coming up with excuses.
So Gwen's amazing. So she does those three jobs that she has, that she works and does, like farmers markets and those type of things, and then sells online and all this other stuff. And then she's the primary caregiver to Jordan. I mean, I try, but she's amazing, right? She's got all the great instincts. She teaches him at home all the time. I mean, he goes to a special autism academy, but she's there all the time. So anyway, And then she's loving and she can still show up on Sunday and smile and talk to people and everything like that.
It's amazing. You guys are both amazing.
You are. And we've been able to see her more lately, I think, because does Christian watch Jordan?
Right. So Christian's 14 now. He's almost 15. And we trust him with Jordan more than any other person on the planet.
Sure.
And he watches. We've made a routine now where he watches Jordan during first service. I teach the kids. Gwen goes and listens to Rob and then or whoever's teaching that day. And then in between services, I go and get Christian, bring him back to the high school class for Cole. And then I go into second service and Gwen goes home and watches Jordan. Wow. So, because it's just, we can't have Jordan, you know, it's really difficult to have him out in places unless he has food. So
unless he has food.
He loves food. I've never seen anybody like food. So one funny thing he does, and I'm going to try and describe this to the internet people. it's hilarious. He comes into the kitchen. So Gwen cooks different meals every night. We don't cook special meals for him. He has to eat it, you know, or make his own peanut butter and jelly sandwich, whatever. But for the most part, he does like all of our meals. Every once in a while, he doesn't. So whenever she's cooking, he literally walks up to the pot and looks in and then goes... He literally turns his nose up and walks away if he doesn't like what she's cooking. And then Gwen will argue with him and say, fine, you don't have to eat it if you don't want to. And he's hilarious. And so he'll...
His own way of communicating that.
Right. So, but he'll... Then that night, he either makes some leftovers or... He's really very good at, you know, at doing a lot of different things. So just because he doesn't communicate, he still communicates.
Right.
You just have to... You have to be mindful.
Learn his signals and his wave.
So he really can't communicate, but then he'll cook it. You know, he'll make his own meal, and it's really
cool. That's awesome.
That is.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
You guys are impressive.
Yes, you
really are.
Well,
we love you both so much, and it's been great to be able to see Gwen more. And yeah. I mean, you're like a bad penny. Sorry, you just always show up. But it's nice to see your
wife. It's weird how she's jumping in on this now. Sorry. Used to just be you and I, but all of a sudden this is good. We have fun with Blake, but I'll tell you what, he's been a good friend. He's a very special part of the Eastgate family, and having him on staff has been invaluable. And we're very grateful to you for everything you do around there. You're a good man.
Remember the other day whenever during Lance's teaching on a Wednesday night, he started talking about how awesome of a pastor you were and all that other stuff?
Oh, jeez.
So I don't know what to say right now.
Oh, you relate to that then?
No, I don't. I think he was saying the opposite. This thing you say, that guy was out of his mind. I don't know what he was talking about.
There's something wrong with him, Rob. We don't need him there.
Quiet.
The cat says it's time.
Well, Blake, we can't thank you enough for coming and hanging out and talking to us and letting everybody get to know you a little bit more if they didn't already. And
We really appreciate you coming and
we appreciate
taking
you
taking some time in your morning.
Yeah,
Gwen, and
I totally enjoyed it. Well, I love you guys.
Well, have a great Thanksgiving.
Too.
We love you too.
All right,
God bless. So that was great. Thank you so much, Blake. And if you've listened to this and you haven't really known Blake, let him know that you listened and that you love him, unless you hate him. If you hate him, then don't talk to him. Avoid him.
But if you have any comments or questions that you'd like to ask us, have us cover on a podcast, future podcast, feel free to email us at eastgatepcb@gmail.com.
Or you can leave a comment on wherever you saw this link posted, mm-hmm. either in the Eastgate Facebook page or
on the blog, the Wonder What blog,
or on iTunes if you've subscribed to us through there. So leave us a comment, let us know what you think, let us know what you'd like us to cover, and we'll either ignore it or we'll do it.
We'll see what
we'll probably do it. We're not popular enough to be able to ignore people.
That's right. We haven't earned that place yet.
That's right. All right, well, we are learning how to love God and learning how to love others.
This is our story so far.
God bless you guys.
See you next time. That's not a thing.
We try to sound cool. It just doesn't work.